there's Adams, then there was a Rogers Grocery, and there was Hobbies.
Yes, you know, okay.
And of course, you know, across the street where the bank is now, there's the post office.
Okay.
And a little town hall they had. And there was another grocery store that was corner-wise up there. I don't know whether it was run by the Dennings or somebody. But you would go to the store, now, Hobbies. We'd always go to Hobbies to buy candy. Because, you know, then you get penny candy and 2 cents candy. And we would, he had this guy, black guy, working with him, Russ. And we used to go in there and look for Russ and get the candy. Because if you got penny candy from Russ, you gave Russ your nickel, you may get 5 pieces, you may get 6, you know. Hobby didn't mind. I know he knew he was doing that. And then there was another there, Pete, I think it was Pete Murdoch's father who ran the grocery store. He used to be generous too. So we would look for him and Rush, but we wouldn't look for Hobby. Oh. You go in and look, we would look for Mr. Hobby. We'd go look for either Mr. Murdoch or Russ.
That's great.
Buy our candy.
Oh, that's great.
And then, of course, Adams, the drugstore. We look forward to Saturdays. This is when I was growing up, because Saturdays we got our nickel to go get a Coma ice cream.
Oh, at the drugstore?
At the drugstore. You get a Coma ice cream for 5 cents. And if we'd done well through the week, we could go Saturday afternoon and get that ice cream.
Oh, was it a real treat?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the stores were pretty well open to the black community in Cary.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where did your parents buy groceries?
Well, at that time, we bought mostly at Hobbies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. At Hobbies.
Yeah, Hobbies grocery store. And plus, we didn't have to buy a whole lot because we farmed.
Okay.
My grandfather had a farm, and after he passed, his sons ran the farm, and right across the street here, where the church is in that area there, where the Habitat Homes are now, they had a huge garden.
Oh.
They had everything in it, you know, that you want. So we only, we had to do too much shopping because you had hog killing time.
Okay, so they had hogs?
Hogs, and my grandmother had a smokehouse.
Yeah.
And after they killed the hogs, they would smoke, you know, the hams and the meat in there, and they take the sausage and stuff it and hang it in and let it dry. So we didn't have to go, you know, for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Sugar, flour, you know, things like that.
Staple things.
Staple things. And my grandmother also at the time, they had a cow, so we had a milk and our butter.
Yeah. So you're pretty self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, was it a good place to grow up? Pretty much?
It was, but it was so little to do. I used to tell them all the time, I used to ask my mother, why didn't she have some relatives in other cities? Because I would, you know, there were people who believe in you going different places. I would like to go, you know, go places and do things. But across the street, there was a ballpark, that area was for you. And we had a ragtag ball team, who some Saturdays a team would come and play them, and they'd go play somebody else, you know, and that would be entertainment for, you know, for a while. Mm-hmm. And then of course you could go to Raleigh on the train at that time, 14 cents. You take 50 cents, you could go to Raleigh and come back and go to the movies.
And so as children, you would get on the train and go to the movies just by yourselves, with no adults.
Go and go down Harker Street and go to the movie and come back home. Because they knew when the train ran. And of course, it's blocked now, but coming up, when you're coming up this hill, coming here, when you start coming up, you can see the heads. So they stand out and look. When the train passed, they knew we were coming, you know.
They watched for you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and you played with the other kids in the neighborhood?
Yes. We all played. you know, boys played, and yes, boys do fight.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. They play and they fight. Sometimes you have to go break up a fight. They'd all be in a little game, you know. One had said something and the other one had disputed it. And it would be, you know, like a brawl. But then after this all over, you break it up, they're just sitting there again, just like nothing had ever happened.
All friends again.
All friends again.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. Well, is there anything else that you can think of about life in Cary over all the years that, you know, just what your life experiences, and having left Cary for so long and then come back, you probably gave you a little different perspective on this, what used to be a small southern town. It's not so small anymore. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was actually glad to see it grow because, you know, we would, you know, have to go into Raleigh for everything. And like I said, we did most of our shopping and hobbies, but there was a man here named Ralph Moore. He had an automobile, you know, and until my brothers got theirs, you know, a few automobiles. And it was A&P in Raleigh. And my mother used to make out the list, you know, in those Saturdays, and go to Raleigh to the A&P and buy a lot of things that you wanted because they would be much cheaper.
You know? Oh, okay.
And you know, you could buy in bulk and get things much cheaper.
Yeah.
And he'd come by and I guess pay him $1.50 or something, you know, take it to Raleigh to the A&P.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. So he gave lots of people rides.
Yes.
Yeah. So, boy. Yeah. Now, what was it like in this in Cary during World War II? Were you here then, or were you gone?
Yes, I was here because my brother went into service, and he was my brother. This, me, Robert. He was drafted into the service, and a number of the guys went into service at the same time. They were all called up for the draft, and I know how, you know, the people used to put in a star in the window, let you know you had somebody serving, and nobody, I know a couple of white guys from here were killed.
Really?
In World War II, because one, I can't recall the name, but I remember very distinctly that he hadn't been gone too long before his mother was notified that he had been killed in action.
Mm-hmm.
They lived somewhere over in the vicinity of where the Baptist Church is now, you know, First Baptist. They lived somewhere in that vicinity, but I can't recall their names. But I do remember everybody talking about, you know, him having been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that everyone here, you know, out of our community, came back.
They did?
Yes. Mm. Some of them were never the same.
Mm. From what they had seen and experienced?
What they seen and experienced.
Now, where was your brother? What theater was he in?
He was a mechanic, and he was over in France.
He was?
Yes. And he was involved, he said, in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because at that time, you know, our soldiers were not trained to fight the guns. He was a mechanic, he said, to work on, they were working on tanks. And the units were losing men so fast, he said, that they just came by and threw them all guns and said, come on.
He had to learn how to shoot a gun on the fly, literally.
I guess they all, you know, they had been hunting something and knew something about a gun, but they hadn't been trained.
Oh, my.
Because I used to tell him all the time, I tried to get him and get him to tell his story, you know. He wouldn't. I tried to get him, but I said, tell your story, because he did have a story to tell.
Yeah, you bet. Is he still around?
No, he passed.
Oh.
He's been gone now 3 years. There's only two of us left now.
Oh.
That they have. But some of them came back, and they were never the same. And my brother who went in, the war was over when he went in. This is my brother. I'm between two brothers.
Another brother.
So the brother younger than me, Bruce, when he went in, I think, 44, just as the war was ending. And he was stationed in Germany at And I do know something happened to him. He was never the same.
Really?
You know, and he told different things that was done to him. And I had tried to get him, because he's passed too, I tried to get him to, since they have this freedom of information, I tried to get him to get somebody to get his records to see what had happened to him. Because what he told, some strange things were done to him. And he was never the same. He wasn't crazy, anything like that. He worked hard, but he was a totally different personality. You had to be very careful to what you say to him, you know, approach him.
So it's very traumatic, yes. Obviously. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's hard. And he never told you the whole story of what happened to him?
No, he told me a couple of stories of things that were done to him. But, because he said that, one of the stories, he said that he and some of his guys had decided that, you know, how you have your weekend break, that they were not going to go off base. They were so tired from working during the week. They were going to stay in. So they stayed in their barracks, he said, all day, talking, listening to the radio or whatever. And just about dark, these MPs came in, and they said, that's the one.
Oh, no.
And took him. Mm-hmm. He had not been out of barracks all day.
And what did they accuse him of doing?
He said they took him, and they took him out because it was snow on the ground and everything. He said they took him up into the woods, snow, and abandoned him, left him there. And he said that he didn't know where he was, but he had to wander back. And he said, of course, he couldn't speak German, you know. Mm-hmm. And he wandered back, and he wandered into, and he saw this German. And I guess he knew that he was a soldier or something. He pointed him a direction. And he tried to follow that direction. And the person who was in the barrack with him, I don't know who that was, he said, came looking for him. And as he was wandering, trying to find his way back, he found him.
Oh, thank goodness.
And he got back to the barracks.
And the army took him back into the barracks? And
He didn't, well, they must have kept him in this, because he didn't get out of service until he fulfilled his time.
So he wasn't in trouble with the army, or?
Probably they found out that it was the wrong person or whatever.
Right.
But when he made
it, clear.
But they didn't come back to get him or look for him or anything. But when he made his way back to the barracks, he said this guy helped him, you know, who had, that he was sharing the barracks with, had come looking for him. And that's how he said he was able to get back. Otherwise, he said he would have frozen to death.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's terrible. And by our own army,
yes,
did that to him. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
And he said that. And he knew he hadn't done anything because he had not been out of the barracks that day.
Right. World War II is really, really tough. Yeah. So, yeah. But they did come back.
Yes, they did come back.
Changed.
Changed.
But, yeah.
And one never got over. My cousin, he never got over his situation. He became an alcoholic and finally committed suicide.
Mm-hmm. From the war?
Yes.
Boy, that's hard. Yeah. So, hard times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we've seen quite a bit of history, even in little town, little southern town.
Yes.
Yeah, it touched everyone. Yeah, definitely. And the Korean War as well. And yeah. So anyway, well, Carrie certainly has changed.
Oh yes.
Grown and expanded and. A lot of different changes going on.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, I really appreciate your taking the time today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so now you're an active member of, or you were an active member of the First Church of Christ on Evans Road. Is that right?
Yes, it's Carrie First Christian Church.
Carrie First Christian.
Yes, it's gone through several names. when we were over on that side, it was the we belonged to the congregations.
Okay.
And then they became the Church of Christ.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then they came the where's the Good Shepherd now? I'm having a senior moment.
Yeah, the church on Kildare Farm.
Yes.
The Good Shepherd.
Yeah. It still belongs to the conference. Our church got out of the conference that we were in, and that's how we became Cary First Christian Church, because Good Shepherd started in our church, really.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
Yeah.
When the Reverend Rawls came.
Yeah.
They used our church for a number of their meetings and organizations, getting organized.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, they started meeting. They were meeting in the schools, but like weeks, you know, through the week when they wouldn't have meetings and things, our church, you know, was the one that allowed them to use it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I got it now. It's Cary First United Church of Christ. Because before they dropped the United and got out of the United Conference and left. Now it's Cary First.
Cary First. Oh, okay. And then Good Shepherd built their own church on Kildare Farm Road. But you still have
they're on another senior moment.
Yeah. Is it Maynard?
Maynard.
They're
out on Maynard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're over on Maynard.
Because I think before they got all built up in there, they bought some land because I think they have land for expansion in front of us.
Oh, okay.
Too, and they yes. So we still have service every fifth Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. Since they started, you know, to meet with us and things. We still have some services together.
Okay, I think that's great.
So every fifth Sunday, our churches meet together.
So you have a very strong relationship between the two churches. Yeah, I interviewed Carolyn Sampson a few weeks ago, and she was telling me that out of this relationship between your two churches grew the Martin Luther King Task Force. So both churches were instrumental in bringing that about. And the Good Shepherd Church is primarily white, white church.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're primarily black.
Black.
We have some white members and they have a few black members.
Do they? Yeah.
But we both are predominant, you know, the others.
Yeah. But you also have a very close tie with each other.
Yes.
I think that's fantastic. Yeah. Now, is the Cary Presbyterian, Presbyterian Church, have they been involved with the task force or...
I think Carolyn brings in just about everybody now.
Does she?
You know, I think she does. She brings in just about everybody now, you know, to the Martin Luther King celebration and task force.
Oh, okay.
And I think everybody that, you know, will participate with her.
Yeah.
I know she has the Mormons, the Latter-day Church, you know.
Does she? That's great. The more the merrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's doing a lot of wonderful things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're really and expanding and growing into all kinds of things, which is great.
And I tell Carolyn, I don't know who it is that she doesn't know.
Yeah, she thinks she knows just about everybody. Yeah, this is terrific. Well, thank you so much. This has just been wonderful. You gave me a lot of good information that I didn't know before, and I just really appreciate you taking your time today.
Well, I hope it was worth your time.
Oh, it definitely was. This is great, and I appreciate it. Cary appreciates it. And what we do with our tapes, we transcribe them, type them out, and then we give the master tape and a transcription to the Wilson Library at UNC in Chapel Hill so that they maintain them for us.
Okay.
And they have a huge oral history project called the Southern Oral History Project with 3,000 or 4,000 tapes. And we have our own section in there for Cary. And so this will become part of that. And it's been available to scholars and researchers and whoever might be interested. So your voice and your stories will be found.
Thank
by others. So yeah, so we really appreciate your taking part.
Sure, it was worthwhile.
It definitely, yeah, definitely. So thank you.